You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 13th of February 2016 on Monocle 24. At its peak, The Independent flew off newsstand shelves at a rate of over 400,000 copies per day. But 30 years after its launch, with circulation plummeting so far it's measured only in the tens of thousands, the once proud newspaper is set to abandon print altogether and opt for a digital-only format. It's hardly an unprecedented move in today's tough publishing climate, but what effect will the decision have on other struggling titles? We'll analyse the impact on the wider market today on The Stack. On today's programme, the Independent newspaper here in London is a newspaper no more. Some say the decision was inevitable, but we'll ask those on the inside for their take.
The Independent has always been incredibly inventive with what little it has. But this, it kind of breaks your heart a little bit because it just doesn't feel that it comes from any position of strength whatsoever.
Plus, there's no shortage of those ready to perform a post-mortem on the industry at large, but how much trouble is the wider newspaper market really in?
I think there's one big concern here for UK newspapers as well, and that is the variety of ownership. That's a big concern in terms of the editorial political viewpoints which are being expressed in this country.
All that coming up today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. But we start today's programme, as we're hearing at the top of the show, with news of the, well, big changes on the newsstand scene here in the United Kingdom, at least. The Independent and Independent on Sunday print titles will be no more after the 26th of March. Tyler Brûlé, Monocle's editor-in-chief, joins us on the line from Montreal. Tyler, what do you make of this? Because it's interesting that it's being presented by some within the indie family as an inevitable change, and I guess you'd be the first to sort of rail against that notion.
Well, I think we've seen these types of presentations before, whether it's been magazines. It's not the first time that we've heard people say, we're going to go all digital, and these brands have never been heard from again. And I think that you can probably read out some of the release which was issued by Evgeny Lebedev on Friday to Independent staff. And so, of course, it does promise 25 new digital jobs. They talk about opening up bureaus here and there, but it's very loose on specifics. And I think also you always have to look into the language of structural business change. Well, 25 new digital jobs doesn't mean there's necessarily going to be 25 new jobs in journalism. That's, you know, to me, it just sounds like shifting chairs around the newsroom floor. But I think it's sad. I think the big issue with this, though, is that it suddenly opens the floodgates. It gives a certain license now to maybe a publisher in Norway, someone in the Netherlands, a newspaper group in Canada, to say, yes, you know what, look what they're doing in London. And of course, London is upheld as one of the most dynamic English language print centers in the world. And I think that just gives board members, I think timid publishers, you know, free rein to say, well, if they've thrown in the towel, we'd better do the same.
Andrew, let me ask you. I mean, we should both sort of declare our own interests. We both worked, of course, for The Independent for a number of years. Do you share Tyler's view that this could be a bit of a worry for what it means more broadly, for what other publishing groups might do in response to this news?
Well, an interesting thing here, we know that here in the UK, for example, a newspaper like The Guardian seems to have as its end site being a digital paper anyway. It doesn't really want to be an in-paper. It doesn't believe in it. But it, at least those other newspapers seem to be manoeuvring from a reasonable position of ambition. And I think here what's obviously happened is, you know, the money's run out. They saw a way of getting out. You can smell the deal. It just doesn't feel very good. If it was coming from a place of confidence, as they say in their letter to their staff, and as they say on their website, you would sense it. You would sense some feeling of ambition that this was an exciting moment of transition for The Independent. They touch on some very important things. The Independent, always because of a lack of money, a need to be inventive, has been first. It was first here in the UK to go to the tabloid size for a quality newspaper. It invented this newspaper, The Eye. It's always been incredibly inventive with what little it has. But this, it kind of breaks your heart a little bit because it just doesn't feel that it comes from any position of strength whatsoever.
Tyler, obviously you mentioned at the top about the presentation, the spin that's put on this, and Andrew's mentioned there, you know, the Indy's been an innovator, well, since its inception in the 1980s, so that's understandable. Is there any prospect that any of the things that they're entertaining here might work, in your view? You've mentioned a sort of a justifiably cynical standpoint, but do you think the idea of saying, well, look, we can do great digital journalism and we don't need to be hamstrung by having the responsibilities of a print outlet? I mean, is there any way that you can see a world where that makes sense?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is, as Andrew said, the money's run out. It's very simple. So it's not going to be better times ahead. So I think, you know, that's the key point. Now, of course, they've run a scenario. They've probably looked at some numbers, which I don't know, maybe get them for, you know, along the track for another 18 months or 2 years. But you only had to look at a piece in the Financial Times at the start of this week, which was actually talking about primarily focusing on the state of newspapers in London and saying it was still, of course, you know, a multi-paper city and it was still reasonably vibrant. But the key element that you left that story was that newspapers are still not getting the digital revenues that they are for their pages, and that's the key thing. And they were talking about advertising as well. So if the money is not there today, I don't think it's going to suddenly show up tomorrow. And it strikes me that there was a very, very serious conversation that was probably had to say, look, at we should have a view of forward bookings, and you know, by the beginning of February, if forward bookings for the first quarter going into the second quarter don't look very good from an ad front, we're going to have to pull the plug.
I think it's really important that we understand that the relationship between what happens in print and online for most newspapers is still, you know, really tight. So what's interesting is lots of brands who appear in the print edition, even if it doesn't reach as many people as it used to, they like that presence. Now, will all of those people suddenly be migrated across to a digital-only site? I think it's a real, real difficult challenge. And I think the other, there's lots of interesting things here. One of the things, if you look at the independent website, a website I think is very good and knows its market. I don't like using the word millennials. It always sounds like too much of a buzzword, but this is what they say they're after. And I think it's good at doing what it does. But it feels very different from the newspapers. Mm. Now, they're going to try and bolt these two things together again. So even culturally within the independent, they've actually physically made a separate kind of entity. And business-wise, it stands alone, the website, as a separate company. So the migration of these two kind of slightly different worlds that have evolved, you know, what happens in print and what happens online is not the same. Now they're going to try and bolt them together, move all the readers across. It just feels like there's so many stages to go through. You know, I, of course, wish everybody well. We know, both you and me, Tom, many people still there who are great journalists, and they need to be given the chance to do a good job. But it feels like this is only the beginning of a transition, and there are so many difficult hurdles ahead.
Tyler, just to pick up on one thought, I mean, looking at the reality for print media, for newspapers in this country, it was kind of sobering to look today and see, well, aside from the News of the World, and we know that was closed down for rather different reasons, it certainly wasn't commercially driven, a newspaper hasn't folded in this country since the mid-90s, since going right back to the days of today. So we're talking about 20 years that have supposedly been impossible to navigate, but still, here we were, nothing closed. I mean, does that still fill you with confidence? Is there still some good news here for the wider newspaper scene here in the UK?
I think there is, and we hear it time and again. I penned a funny piece in the FT a couple of weeks ago just about, you know, the importance of, and as Andrew's saying as well, of just having that piece of paper to be physically present. And I think that goes for journalists as much as it goes for readers as well, and advertisers, that there is something about being on the printed page. I think we all know someone says, well, I'm calling from a blog, or I'm calling from the digital edition of X media brand. Can I have a quote? You know, I'm not really sure. But, you know, if you feel that this is a journal of record, and I always come back to the point of something disappearing. Suddenly, you're just not there. I'm not passing the independent at the newsstand. And so, therefore, it's not top of mind. One thing that does surprise me out of all of this, though, that they didn't do this in a stepped phase. Mm-hmm. I could have understood closing down the main paper, but saying, look, we're going to put a lot of resources, we're going to be very smart, we're going to go up against The Economist. We want to be The Independent, as it was when it came out in the 80s, and certainly when The Independent on Sunday came out, we want to go back to those days, a big, confident Sunday newspaper again. And I think that's actually a lost opportunity. You know, had they gone to market and said, we really want to become the singular read, focus all of our resources there, court the advertisers, even become a bit more international, I think that could have been a more interesting, perhaps a more sustainable solution for them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, the Sunday paper came a little bit later in the history of The Independent, but when it came out, it had all these kind of amazing attributes, an extraordinary magazine. It just kind of woke people up to what newsprint could do. And I think Tyler's right. We know that the way that the media is shaking down in newspapers is leaving this gap for something that's a little bit kind of trimmer about what it does, but which has amazing analysis, which has deep thought. And that's what sits in that Sunday paper. And it's a real shame that is. I don't know where that will find its natural home on a website. There are things that happen in that Sunday paper, even now, with a team which you can almost count on a couple of hands, that is amazing. And I think it's a real shame that they're going to be losing that.
Monocle's editor Andrew Tuck and our editor in chief Tyler Brulé on the line from Montreal. Thanks to you both for being here on this week's edition of The Stack. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24, where we continue our analysis and gauge some further reactions to news about The Independent and Independent on Sunday out of London, heading digital only from next month. We're joined next by Mary Dujewski, a long-time editor and contributor to The Independent titles and a regular voice indeed here on Monocle 24. Mary, let me get your response first of all. Obviously, there have been some swirling rumours around. We now know more of the information about the plans ahead. I mentioned your long career with the Indy. What did you make of the plans as detailed and what you've learned in the last couple of days?
Well, I think although The Independent has always seemed in danger, or at least for a very long time, nonetheless, it's still quite a shock for really any serious newspaper in Britain, even The Independent, to cease publication as a physical printed newspaper. The immediate plans of the paper seem to be to go online, rather as the Christian Science Monitor did in the United States, and to have its presence there and try to reach to a more international audience on the grounds that currently its website is very well visited and its journalism is very well regarded, not just in the UK but internationally. So the idea would be to capitalize on that and to save the relatively large expense for a newspaper with a relatively small circulation of actually printing.
Mary, just give us a sense, I don't know, with the journalist's hat on, what is absent when a title ceases to print? I mean, it may sound like an obvious question. Clearly, it's not on newsstand. That presence is gone. As a journalist, if you're contributing to something, how does it change the very fabric of how you think about the work that you're doing if there is no print edition?
I think it changes a lot. It certainly changes a lot for somebody of my generation who's grown up and made the bulk of their career in print and indeed in broadcasting to a lesser extent. But you feel that something is sort of validated, that somehow it's more influential and more serious somehow if it appears on paper. Now, that may be a very old-fashioned view and it may be totally wrong in current circumstances. You may be looking at something that is moving forward into a different, much more digital world. Nonetheless, it's difficult for somebody like me to look at it with anything other than regret, even looking towards the bright future. But there's something else I'd like to say too, which every time rumours have swirled about The Independent, either maybe going out of business completely or disappearing from the newsstands to go online only, you look at the range of British newspapers and the range of opinions they represent, because British newspapers, unlike newspapers in a lot of countries, they are, each of them is very political and very partisan. And you look at a whole newsstand full of British newspapers, and you just think that if you take The Independent away, even though it's been going for a relatively short time, 30 years, something will be missing from that newsstand, a very particular voice and a very particular stance and approach. And I really do think that'll be a loss.
Mary, let me just ask you then about that environment that's left behind. What does it mean if there's something that's very particular that's lost? And it's interesting, I guess a lot of people talk about companies that fail to innovate often falling by the wayside. But The Independent has long championed innovation, and it has itself been innovative, whether it's about whole front page sort of opinion leads, the shift down to tabloid format, all sorts of it, even the launch of The Eye, which of course is now being sold on. These were all innovative business decisions, which were, to a greater or lesser extent, fairly successful. So it's never been afraid of innovating. What do we lose then? And what happens? How do we reconcile those fears? We're all journalists. We value the same principles. How do we make sure that this isn't, you know, the beginning of, well, if not the beginning of the end, the beginning of a trend where we see more of these sorts of closures?
Well, as I say, you know, I think there is something about a physical presence, and to lose that will be regrettable, at least until such time as the media climate everywhere, including in the UK, either completes a switch to digital, where that becomes, you know, the norm, or in an international climate similarly. I mean, it's true, you know, as you say, that The Independent, sometimes by force of circumstances and by having less money than a lot of other papers, you know, it has innovated, and in a way it's been forced to innovate. It was the first serious paper to take a tabloid format, which was so successful so quickly that even, you know, the venerable Times of London followed. Its design has been pioneering, and you have to look at a physical newspaper, The Independent, today. It stands out from the whole range of other British papers simply by force of its design. It's been generally spare, quite minimalist, modern-looking. And, of course, however a website replicates that, and the latest version of The Independent website tries to, it still doesn't have that sort of sense of priorities and editorial judgments that you have from a physical newspaper.
Mary Dejewski, an independent stalwart for many years and a regular with us here on Monocle 24. Thanks very much for sharing your insights about the demise of the print editions of the Indie and iOS here on The Stack. More on this story coming up next. This is The Stack on Monocle 24, where today we're taking a closer look at the newspaper business following yesterday's announcement that the Independent newspaper here in London is switching to a digital-only format beginning next month. The market pressures that contributed to the Indie's difficult decision can't be understated, but it's equally important to note that when we look at the state of newspapers around the world, it's far from a strictly bad news day. On last night's edition of Midori House, Andrew Muller sought the insights of James Rogers, senior lecturer in journalism at City University here in London, and Alessio Patalano, lecturer at King's College London.
I'm an old-fashioned person, that's why I'm wearing a bow tie, which means that I like my paper, you know, the hard copy version, the hard copy of something is the one that I prefer. I still buy books, you know, I find very uncomfortable to do the electronic version of
things. Yeah, I agree completely. I read on screens for work, I read paper for pleasure.
Exactly, yeah. Right, so spot on, exactly, that's exactly my same position. So, yes, I can see the advantages and, you know, saving the environment and all the other bits and pieces and stories that you can put forward, but it seems to me the way it's been presented suggests that on the surface has been presented as like, well, this is a great innovative idea. In practical terms, I'm not so sure about it. And I'm rather sceptical in this respect, because people who tend to read online and focus on online decision, sort of a visual engagement, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're looking for a different type of content as well. Mm. So that sort of opens up a broader debate, a very important debate, as to how you deliver high-quality information to a broader audience and in what ways you should educate the audience to push themselves a bit further, or you just sort of get used to what they want, which necessarily is not the trend that you'd like to keep, to have that kind of high end of product.
But James, to what extent was its problem not so much the internet, but the fact that it was under-resourced?
I think it may well have been under-resourced. I mean, based on conversations I had with contacts of the paper over the last 12 months or so, you mentioned The Eye, its sort of cut-down version. That was what was keeping the bigger print titles afloat, as far as I understand, in terms of revenue. That's where the money was coming from. And now that has gone from the Independent stable, if you like, quite a lot of newspapers, I mean, thinking in this country or indeed globally, if one talks to the Financial Times and the Guardian, they've successfully implemented digital-first strategies, but digital-only, which is in effect what the Independent is proposing to do, is something quite distinct from that. So I think it probably was to some extent, and it's a great shame. I mean, the newspaper has got some excellent writers, particularly on international affairs.
Indeed so.
And one can only hope that their work is going to continue to find a fairly wide audience. And one understands, of course, that the daily sales of the newspapers weren't great, but it's difficult, even with the greatest respect to Mr. Lebedev, looking through his statement today, it's difficult to really draw the positives from it, I think.
Just to follow up your point about the online-only nature of what they're now proposing, is there any extent to which you think that the newspaper may have been a victim of the internet, not in the way that everybody's assuming it is, but of the fact that its own website, which is its most seen presence in the world, I mean, it's terrible. Is that a factor, the fact that just the actual website wasn't very good and that reflected badly on the print publication?
I mean, I think it probably is because I'm quite a regular reader of the title, actually, and occasionally if I read something on my way into work in the morning, I might want to share it on social media later, and it's quite hard to find it sometimes, even though it's their own stories. If I may, I think there's one big concern here for UK newspapers as well, and that is the variety of ownership. There's one title is disappearing here only, well, two titles if you include the Sunday, but I think in terms of how it's going to leave the bigger British newspaper market, that's a big concern in terms of the editorial political viewpoints which are being expressed in this country.
Alessio, you were saying there earlier that, like both of us, you prefer to read on paper. Is it important, do you still think, not just because it's a nicer thing to read, but that it gives a title, a publication, a certain gravitas to actually have a print version? Even a product of the digital age like Politico produces an actual paper edition. Does that matter?
I think so. I think it matters because, and again, there is a very much of a wide debate. And this is a debate that it doesn't just belong to the news industry. You go to universities now, and one of the biggest debates is to the extent to which you should get rid of physical books and go to electronic versions of everything. And so you have very different opinions. I still believe that there is a sense of gravitas, there is a certain sense of commitment, something that is printing that comes out as a sort of hard version. It stays there.
That was James Rogers, Senior Lecturer in Journalism at City University here in London, and Alessio Patalano, Lecturer at King's College London, in conversation with Andrew Muller on Midori House. We're almost at the end of today's programme, but before we finish, let's revisit an interview we featured here on The Stack back in 2014. As we've been hearing on the programme so far, it's been a tough 24 hours for any voracious newspaper reader, an even harder one for our friends at the Independent newspaper here in London, which will print its final hard copies next month. 2 years ago, publisher Murray Schwartz set up the Saturday paper in Melbourne, with a readership across the city, Sydney and Canberra, and a focus on long-form, digestive journalism. The newspaper aims to sell between 60 and 80,000 copies, an interesting figure when compared to the Independent's current 55,000. On the day it first hit newsstands, Monocle's Nolan Giles spoke to the team behind this bold new venture.
While many of the sounds of Melbourne's bustling city streets haven't changed much over the years, the tram bells, the street performers, the cries of the once famous Melbourne newsboy selling the dailies and the weekend editions have long faded. As newspaper circulation steadily dropped, and titles have been consolidated to a point where Rupert Murdoch controls over 70% of the nation's papers, the prospect of launching a new, independent weekend edition is daunting, to say the least. Enter Murray Schwartz. Today he launches the Saturday paper with the aim of breathing new life into the Australian weekend newsstand.
I'm Murray Schwartz. I'm a publisher, and I've been a publisher for 40-odd years. Books was the way it started, and then eventually the frequency changed and we started publishing the Quarterly Essay, which is well known in Australia, and then after that, we went to The Monthly, which is a monthly magazine, and now we've gone weekly. I hope we never have to go daily.
Do you think you could take us through the business reasoning behind the newspaper? Obviously, it's an odd time to launch a newspaper the way the market is in terms of the newspaper industry. What's the business model behind the Saturday paper?
We see an opportunity here where others are seeing a real crisis, and it is a crisis for others. And the reason it's a crisis for others is that they're kind of stuck in a legacy situation where the model that they've got is very hard to change. They've got big newsrooms, they've got enormous staff, they've got plant, all kinds of things, so huge costs. But unfortunately, the revenues have dropped. The revenues have dropped because they've migrated. They've migrated online. So our model is very simple. It's a startup. It's got no legacy costs. There is no management structures. It's myself and then the editor. It's basically a lowering of costs. We run it like a small business rather than like a huge business. And with technology today, you can do that. It's like a double-edged sword, really. Whilst it's hurting the existing papers and the existing media organisations, it assists a small organisation, a startup.
For a new title, Schwartz has brought new talent into the mix. Eric Jensen is the 25-year-old editor of the Saturday paper, who cut his teeth in the newsroom of the Sydney Morning Herald before joining the project 18 months ago.
Having never had theoretical training in what it was to be a newspaper man or what newspapers were supposed to be, what I have as an editor is just what I've learnt on the job, what I've picked up from senior correspondents, what I've picked up from that kind of grumble that is the white noise of newsrooms, that the constant put upon, downtrodden, cranky reporter that wants to tell you what's wrong with the newspaper and what the newspaper really should be. And in the last 18 months working on this paper and sort of bringing it through, I've really just been putting into print, into some kind of living form, the complaint of a well-informed newsroom. We began by looking really closely at newspapers, deciding that they did certain things really well and that in those instances we'd have to find different ways of doing those things. But also we found that they were doing things, I think, less well, and that's what will end up as the core of this paper, is deciding to make our niche the niche that they've, I think, neglected in some respects. And that it's narrative journalism, strangely. The thing that seems missing in news pages to me as I go through them is this fundamental storytelling tool, this sense of narrative. It's disappeared from stories. More often now, a news story is an assembly of facts. It hasn't an arc. It doesn't have something that pulls you through. It's not being thoughtful about the way in which it communicates with you. It's simply putting one idea after another. You see this series of inverted pyramids sort of scattered across a broadsheet page, and you wonder if there might be a more pleasurable way of having news told to you.
The newspaper is high-end, both in look and feel. It's printed on a 70 GSM extra-white stock, and while only 32 printed pages, its thick, tactile nature aims to entice a well-read consumer.
It's a luxury product, and I think that luxury products will want to advertise in here. The Monthly has taught us that the arts, opera, ballet, art galleries, like to advertise because, again, they're advertising in a high-level luxury product. We learnt a lot from The Monthly. And I suppose The Monthly is what has given me confidence to do this as well, because we are really the only current affairs magazine in the country. So we are the only one. So that emboldened me to think, well, it's possible.
And could you take us through the logistics of the publication, where you're printing it? I know you're printing it on an almost like an extra thick newsprint stock. How many are you printing? Where are they going to be distributed? How is that going to happen?
It's being printed by Fairfax, and they've got a printery in Ballarat, in Melbourne, which is a town outside of Melbourne, and Richmond, which is a town outside of Sydney. And so the print version, the Melbourne and the Sydney will be printed separately, of course. They'll be printed on Friday and distributed on Saturday mornings. The Sydney version edition will also go to Canberra because it's only a couple of hours' drive away, so it's an easy delivery over there. And the rest of the country, in fact the world, has it online. So, and I intend in time to extend the market.
From Melbourne, for Monocle, this is Nolan Giles.
That was Monocle's Nolan Giles there chatting to the team behind the Saturday paper in Melbourne. And that's it for this week's programme. Thanks to our producer, Ben Ryland, researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and editors, Claire Aban and Antonio Fernandez. Comments or queries are welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us again next Saturday at the same time. The legendary George Lois will be our very special guest. You can always listen again to this show and past editions at monocle.com or via iTunes. This has been The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Until next time, it's goodbye.